Welcome back to another Nerdcast interview. This is Jay, and this week I talked to Robbie Rowland. He's a pitcher in the St. Louis Cardinal organization, and he's currently pitching in winter ball in Puerto Rico. We talk about the differences in playing in Puerto Rico versus the States, his career in the minors, having a father as a major league player, and just baseball in general. Then he also crushed my hopes of asking a beer-related question at the end of the podcast by saying he doesn't like beer, but I'll forgive him for that. This week's unofficial beer sponsor is Boulevard Brewing out of Kansas City. I was drinking their Heavy Lifting IPA when I recorded the podcast. It's your typical West Coast-style IPA, but it's pretty solid. Oh, it sounds good.
How you doing?
All right, how are you?
No complaints, man. Not one bit. Got an off day today. Just rejuvenating, I guess you could say.
Yeah, you're down in Puerto Rico right now?
Yes, sir. We're in San Juan, so it's pretty nice here. Yeah.
So let's just start with that. How's playing in Puerto Rico different than traveling the United States?
Where do I start? Culture's different, obviously. As far as like the baseball side goes, we only play like 4 to 5 games a week. It's a 40 game schedule, and that lasts, I want to say, like 2 months. I think our first game was October 27th, and then our last is December 30th. So yeah, just right around 2 months. So there's a lot of off days, a lot of days to, like I said, rejuvenate, and, you know, I'm not throwing a baseball every single day like I would be during the States, so that's nice. But as far as everything else, man, just obviously you're playing with all Puerto Ricans, so that's definitely a change in culture. But they actually do a really good job of real Americanized here. I'm sure you've heard a lot of people talk about it. It's not like how it would be in Mexico or Dominican or Venezuela in that aspect. Is there's a lot of people here that speak English. So it definitely makes it easier on us Americans, you know, going around and trying to order food and little things like that. And if you're wondering, I have not learned a lick of Spanish.
Yeah, I saw your tweet about the Rosetta Stone, so.
I know, man. I actually had, like, I looked on my phone, and they had an app, and I ended up downloading it, and, like, the first day, I was like, okay, man, like, I can do this every day, you know, and I can probably get used to just doing, like, a 5-minute lesson, and then after the first day, I haven't even gotten back on it.
Yeah. So is this the first time you've played out of the country?
This is the first time. Yeah, I was actually trying to pursue winter ball ever since, I think, the 2014 season. Just being a guy that loves the game, you know, I'm always looking for a way that I can keep playing. So 2014, I was trying to pursue it, ended up getting released in August, and then decided to take a good, like, couple months break and clear my head. So didn't get the opportunity to do it then. And then 2015, I was going to do it again and ended up getting the invite to the Arizona Fall League. So then 2016 gave me a perfect opportunity with having shoulder or elbow surgery in February, only getting 20 innings in this year. So this offseason definitely called for it.
Yeah, you could use a little bit extra work after having most of the season off. Was that frustrating for you?
Oh, dude, to say the least, because in 2015, to sum it up, things I guess you could say started to click for me, mentally and physically. And so, like, as you can imagine, it's just super excited going into camp in that fall or this year. You know, had the big league invite, was going to go early. And then it was actually, like, I want to say maybe six to 5 days in that range before camp even started. I had felt a little elbow discomfort, you know, and it just didn't work out. So I ended up having to call the club and, you know, tell them, and they took matters real seriously and flew me to St. Louis like the next day and figured it all out there. And yeah, I mean, to talk about frustration, man, oof, to say the least. But you know, every challenge kind of presented itself to me in that year, and you know, you gotta just hit it head on, and I learned a lot from it. That was the first time I'd ever experienced an injury in that magnitude, so that was definitely a new challenge in my career. And to have gone through it and kind of learn from it, and you know, there's always, every different challenge you face, there's always ways to kind of figure things out and learn from it. How can you approach it the next time it happens, or vice versa? So it sucked, but at the same time, went through it, got better from it, became a better person, that kind of stuff. So can't regret all of it.
Yeah. How was the rehab process?
It was good. I guess as good as it can be. It was, so surgery was February 15th, and then I think I started throwing with like a week left of camp. So the actual process, man, I wish I had the stuff in front of me, but I think it was like a 4-week process, maybe 5 weeks of just straight like physical therapy, like trying to get the range in the arm back. You know, it wasn't a Tommy John, so obviously things were going to be a little faster. But you know, just listening, really being a sponge when it came to what the medical staff said, and doing what I can do, controlling what I can control, and showing up every day willing to work. I think that's the biggest thing, man. Is it's a tough atmosphere, because as a baseball player, you're so used to competing every day and going out there and trying to freaking, you know, beat the opponent. And then you get stuck in an atmosphere of rehabilitation, and your only opponent is yourself. So it's kind of a different, I guess, change in that aspect. And it was hard at first kind of to grasp, you know, okay, what am I really fighting for here, kind of thing. And then, you know, after the time, it was just like, you have to show up every day willing to compete to get better. You know, it's a long process, but to be honest, it did fly by. You know, days went by quick, and I was real fortunate. You know, I was in a really good, or am in a really good organization with great medical staff, and they helped me along the way, obviously. And you know, it all went smooth, and looking back at it, and definitely was fortunate to have the people around me that I did.
So were you down in Jupiter rehabbing it?
Yeah, I was down in Jupiter at the Cardinals facility. Definitely, you know, was down there. Gosh, I guess I got down there maybe towards the end of February, and then it was a 5-month process. I think I started my rehab assignment in like middle of July, or maybe early July. I'm not exactly sure, but I was down there for quite a long time.
Yeah, and so by the end of the season, you were back with Springfield, correct?
Yeah. So I went on a couple different rehab assignments. Went to State College, had a rehab assignment there for I think 3 outings. Those outings went good, and then went to Palm Beach maybe for like 2-3 weeks, and then I want to say I got a month in maybe at Springfield. I'm not sure exactly, as of days just fly by during the season, and I don't really keep track of days as it is, so I couldn't tell you the exact amount of weeks I was in Springfield, but I finished with them.
All right, so So now you're in Puerto Rico. You just re-signed with the Cardinals, correct?
Correctamundo.
So have they talked to you about where you're going to spend next season?
No. That discussion wasn't really had. I don't think it really needed to be had. You know, the way just the baseball world works is, you know, you're constantly having to impress, you know. I wouldn't say it's a completely clean slate, but, you know, they know what I've done in the past 2 years, and I want to say they like me, but at the end of the day, it's what have you done for me lately? So I got to, you know, the biggest goal for me is to show up to camp ready to compete and, you know, do good and hopefully stay healthy.
Yeah.
And make a good impression, and then you know, the rest will take care of itself. But as far as, you know, a lot of people ask where do you think you'll start, or what have they said? It's, you don't really know till you know, I guess.
Right. One good spring could put you almost anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just looking forward to the opportunity. This will be technically my first big league camp. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to having the opportunity to, you know, compete and showcase my skills in front of some of the higher brass.
Very cool. So a big thing I love is the MLB draft. What was your draft experience like? I know you were a third round pick.
Yeah. Wow. What is that, 6 years now? Six years? Some change? Holy crap. You're gonna make me feel old, man. So my draft experience was hectic, man. It was Northern California kid, had a lot of good talent in that area. I was one of the guys that basically approached that situation like, I want to play and I want to sign. Whereas a lot of amateurs will say, well, I'm kind of like thinking about college, you know, blah, 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 or I want to go to college. I was kind of like, you know, I said top three rounds, let's do it. Like, money wasn't really a huge issue. I knew that I wanted to play, so, man, got a lot of attention throughout that spring, and then draft day happened, and you hear a lot of things. So it was right around the time where, like, Twitter was kind of blowing up, you know, and yeah. And I was kind of like getting involved in that. So obviously a lot of rumors, and I was 18, you know, so of course I'm going to believe anything I said or anything I read, you know. So read a lot of things saying first round, possibly early second, and then, you know, woke up. So it didn't go in the first round. I think, yeah, so the first round was like a separate day. I think they had the first round on the first day, and it was like the June 7th was the first day. So it didn't go, but then it kind of sucked in a way because that June 8th day, was the draft started at like 8 a.m. or something crazy.
Yeah.
And it was like, I loved sleeping back then. So I was kind of bummed that I had to wake up early. But actually, no, I couldn't even sleep, to be honest. Woke up, and then we had to throw it on the laptop. And then they had that draft tracker. And then got a few calls early second, late second. And then finally, the only call that really mattered was the area scout with the D-backs at the time, just calling me to tell me, you know, they had me for the 88th pick, got it done, and then the rest is history. It was crazy, though.
Yeah, you were a big basketball player at that time, too. Was there, did you have one sport preferred over the other, or?
Dude, yeah, so, I mean, baseball, obviously, with my dad playing and me growing up around the sport, was always like a number one. And then basketball kind of just fell into that category of a hobby until, I guess you would say, around freshman year of high school. I think that's when it became like a real like sport, and I was starting to take it really serious. I was going after some like school and state records for scoring, so I was, you know, had that goal in mind, so I was, you know, pushing myself to see how good I can get at it. And then I guess summer going into junior year, I started like playing AAU, testing my talents you know, all across the world, and noticing like, well, shoot, I can play a little bit with these guys. And so junior year came around and started getting pretty good, and then like it started becoming harder to kind of balance the two. But luckily they were in such a different season that I never had to, you know, pick one or the other besides summer. I guess summer was probably the most difficult. You know, I'd be gone for a week playing basketball, and then I'd have to play baseball, so I was constantly having to do both, which was fine. You know, like I was 17, 16 years old, so obviously the motor was just unreal. But senior year came around, and I was having schools kind of offer me, you know, dual scholarships, or, you know, saying, hey, come here, we'll let you do this, we'll let you walk on here for this. And I think it was right around the time that the area codes happened that I realized that if I wanted to pursue a professional career, that baseball was going to be that option. I mean, I still love basketball, but as far as I think the smarter decision, the way my talents were, I think baseball worked out better.
So I know a lot of kids now want to specialize in one sport early on to get better at it. Are you a proponent of that, or would you rather see kids play multiple sports and be just generally more athletic?
Wow, that's a good question. I just had a conversation with a buddy yesterday about this. I think the up-and-coming generations, it's difficult because they're so connected to the electronics of things, you know, and like social media, or just their phones in general. And you start seeing less and less kids go out and play and just run around and, you know, just do whatever. And you don't see a lot of kids these days, like you said, like doing every sport. Like, because I remember when I was growing up, it was like whatever we can get our hands on, whatever ball it was, like that's what we're gonna play. And then we were just running around and doing whatever. So like for me personally, that helped me, you know, because I was constantly staying in shape with other things, and I was gaining athleticism by doing playing other sports. And then it actually helped my scouting process in baseball, because I would have scouts come and watch my basketball games.
Oh, wow.
Really admire like the athleticism and the body of work behind, you know, what I brought to the table. So I will always be a huge believer in that while you're young, to play anything you can, I guess, whatever you want to, whatever, I guess, you enjoy. It's actually funny I say that, because my dad would never let me play football, but I always kind of wanted to play, you know, and he would never let me play because he got hurt a little bit playing when he played in high school. So luckily, I guess, he didn't allow me to do that. But just being a kid and you know, throwing football around in the driveway or just running around, you know, I think 100% helped me gain athleticism, you know, and grow confidence. And especially like kids these days, you see a lot of kids doing the year-round baseball, and it's like, for me personally, that's a lot of baseball. That would burn me out if I was young, you know, and I had the attention span that I did. But I guess it's, you know, like I said, my preference is obviously multiple sports, but it all lies in the individual.
Yeah, and I think year-round sports, like doing one sport year-round, would increase the risk of getting hurt playing it.
Yeah, that's definitely a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think, you know, freak accidents happen. You got to kind of rule those out sometimes, but definitely throwing a baseball year-round, I can't back any science with anything, but definitely could see the negative effects of that. I think the whole thing like Little League is doing with pitch counts right now is good, I guess. It's a good start, but yeah, it's definitely a hot topic, man.
Yeah, well, pitch counts are a hot topic too. When you were younger, did you have pitch counts, or did they just let you throw and throw?
Yeah, I had a unique upbringing, I guess you would say. With my dad, obviously, being a catcher in the big leagues, he saw a lot of different routines from a lot of successful big league pitchers. And he had a mindset that the more we, you know, train the arm, the more it'll give back. So while, quote, in season, you know, I would throw a lot, and I would throw to allow the arm to get in shape. Obviously, that goes within the territory if I had a period of time where I wasn't throwing, where I would put the ball down and play basketball throughout the year. So it wasn't a constant 12-month process. It was just, you know, while it was baseball season, we were going to throw a lot, we were going to long toss, we were going to get the arm in impeccable shape, and then, you know, the arm will give back what you train it to. So for me, my process was not less is more. Obviously, you hear that a lot in baseball. Mine was more is more. And it helped. It really did. We didn't have pitch counts. We had, I think we had inning limits in high school. And it was like you could throw 10 innings in a week. So, you know, you would start like on a Tuesday or Friday and go 7, and then you could relieve like 3 one of the other days.
Yeah.
And then like no, shoot, I don't think we had pitch counts in Little League. Obviously, our coaches were smart about, you know, how much they were throwing their guys. But definitely it wasn't, I mean, you know, it's not how it is now. It wasn't back then, but just got to be smart about it. And the individual knows their limits and knows their arm and what they can and cannot do. I think that's a major key in developing a good arm, is just listening to it and understanding kind of your limits and what you should do or what you shouldn't do, and just being smart about it.
So with your dad being, he was with the Tigers, right, for 5 years?
He was, he got drafted by the Tigers and then traded to Boston. And then after the strike hit, he spent one more year in Boston in 95. And then 96, he was with Blue Jays. 97 was San Francisco.
Okay.
Both in AAA. But big league time with Detroit and Boston, yeah.
So how much exposure did you have to the Tigers and the Red Sox when he was with them?
Oh, dude, I had a lot, man, but I was, like, just learning how to freaking walk.
Yeah.
You know, so I was, like, super young. My brother, obviously, being 3 years older, remembers a lot more stuff. We have pictures of, like, me running on the field and being in the clubhouse and stuff, but I don't really, really remember it. I wish I did.
Yeah. That'd be cool. And so your brother was drafted, too, wasn't he?
That's a whole nother story. We did a brother deal right out of the draft. So he was going to get drafted. He was going to be a later round guy out of an NAIA school. But we decided once I went to the third round that that he would call the teams that had him targeted and then just tell those guys not to draft him. So the whole draft would go through, and then Diamondbacks would sign him as a free agent.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of a cool gig that my agency worked up. So that was fun.
So how long did he play for?
He ended up just playing in the 1 year. It was kind of a crummy situation. It was, so 2010, we both got shipped to Missoula for short season, mm-hmm. A-ball. And he actually caught my professional debut.
Oh, wow.
So and the mom and dad were in the stands. So that was a cool moment.
Yeah.
Definitely always have that. But he actually did super well. Yeah, he got, like, player of the week two times in the first month. He was hitting over 400 for, like, the first month. Finished the year right around 300, and then, you know, it's just a tough gig with professional baseball, and having a lot of guys. And so we came into camp that next year, and, you know, Diamondbacks basically told him, like, look, you know, you came in as a free agent. There's a lot of guys here that are good catchers, and, you know, it's a tough business. So he ended up getting released that spring, and then, you know, never really latched on with another team.
Yeah. So was that tough to see, and then for you to keep going?
Yeah, it was tough to be a part of it, you know, because, you know, that's your brother. Obviously, had gone through that first season together, and I mean, just having him there that first season, had having that comfort level was huge for me. You know, because I was 18 years old, leaving home, you know, going to play a game against, you know, people 3 to 6 years older than me, and then, but still having that brother there that really made things less difficult, I guess. And then come to spring and seeing him, you know, work hard throughout the off season, and then come to camp, and then things not working out. Kind of, yeah, man. I mean, tough to put into words, but yeah, it was tough. But you got to stay professional about it. You got to understand, you know, the business side of things. I think at the time, I think I was 19. Yeah, so I was, you know, a little immature, and, you know, kind of was like, dang, you know, how can they do that? You know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But now, obviously, being older and more mature, you can't hate the organization for it. It's a business move, and, you know, it is what it is.
So you spent 2 years with the Diamondbacks and then went to the Pirates?
Yeah, so I got traded to the Pirates in it was actually the last day of spring training in 2012.
Yeah, for Brett Lauren, Rule 5 pick.
Yeah, that was an interesting move.
Yeah.
I didn't actually understand that move until like 2 years later.
Yeah.
Because I know like how Rule 5s work as far as, you know, pertaining to the 25-man roster. But yeah, apparently they wanted to keep him, but they didn't want to put him in the big league. So I guess it was just a straight-up trade.
Yeah.
Because at the time, like, the way it was explained to me was, like, and you know, I was young, so, like, the first words I heard was, like, Rule 5. And yeah. I was like, what? Like, was I Rule 5? Or, like, is that what Rule 5 is? Is, like, they have to trade someone for something? So, like, the whole thing was just kind of a big blur.
Yeah.
But, no, it worked out.
Yeah, because, I mean, eventually you made your way to the Cardinals, and you've had a lot of success since you've been with the organization.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I tell people every day, like, just this game presents so many, like, different opportunities, and it's so cool to just share my journey with a lot of people, man, because it's something that's, I think, is pretty rare. You know, had gone through the trade, gone through the draft process, gone through being a prospect, gone through being, you know, a guy that was released to a guy that, you know, back onto the prospect, fall league. You know, it's kind of a whole mixture of this one big roller coaster. So just trying to stay level-headed, you know, and take the good with the bad and learning from the negatives, and then just turn them into positives, man. I've learned a lot throughout. I think I'm going into my 8th year now, maybe 7th, I'm not sure, but just learning throughout the whole process of it, man, and just being a sponge and just trying to enjoy the time. But yeah, the Cardinals have been awesome for me, you know, and I think I've finally gotten to a place where I can be myself and be comfortable with the things that I do on the field, and just be comfortable with who I am as a person too. So it's definitely been a huge blessing to be with that organization.
So did the Cardinals help you adjust your mechanics or something to get a little more success, or?
I wouldn't say they really adjusted my mechanics. I guess the story on my failures has been a lot mechanical. I'll try to keep this as short as possible because it's kind of a long process. But I had dealt with a lot of mechanical issues dating back to when I was in my last year with the D-backs. You know, they kind of had a certain way that they wanted me to throw. I had been an over-the-top guy, you know, hard thrower.
Yeah.
And I was kind of getting to a position where I was clearing my head too much, and then they tried to straighten me out, which eventually dropped my arm slot. And I had some success in 2012 with it when I had gotten traded. When I went over to the Pirates, played in the Sally League, and, you know, I had revamped my whole style of pitching. I used to be over the top with a 12-6 curve, threw harder, and now, you know, flash to 2 years later, and I'm like a low three-quarter sinker slider guy in an organization, you know, that was real heavy on sinker ball guys. So I was in a good spot, and flash forward to, you know, 2 years later, I'm still trying to do the same thing. The only problem is I had no arm strength when I had dropped down. So I had lost a lot of velo, sacrificed a lot of velo for movement. But I think just the truth of the matter is you know, they want to see the velocity. And once I had gotten to a position where I was trying to find freaking where my arm slot was and trying to figure out how can I generate arm strength or arm speed, it was kind of too late with that organization. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise when I got released, because I was now able to kind of just clear my head and take time off and decide, like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is the person who I want to go back to. And I had kind of just gotten with my pops and kind of got back on that throwing regimen of how I had it in high school, you know, a strict amount of long toss, a lot of throwing, you know, and I think that just really got me back into a comfort zone. And I was able to repeat really easy because it was a natural slot and it was a natural throwing routine. And I had done that, you know, my whole life growing up, until, you know, that year with the Pirates. So once I got back to that kind of style of throwing, I got into that Cardinals organization, man, and they were just like, look, like, we believe in long toss, you know, we won't limit your throwing, like, take as much time as you need, you know, we won't limit your bullpens, throw as much as you need. And, you know, I was 23 going in, so I knew my body and I knew my arm and I knew, like, what it would take, you know, to be successful. So I think just the ability of them allowing me to just trusting me to know what my arm needed, and just kind of running with that, I think, was the biggest thing. Having an organization that had faith in you and confidence that you knew what you were doing. So I wouldn't say, you know, anything mechanically. You know, it's funny now because mechanics is the last thing I think about.
Yeah.
I kind of just lift my leg and throw the ball as hard as I can now. And it's funny how, you know, I go through this whole journey, and you know, we talk about the ups and downs and talk about learning from different things. And, you know, granted, like, I went through those mechanical problems when I was young. So I was able to grow from that and realize, like, all right, mechanics is not something that I should be worrying about, because that kind of stuff will get in your head, and, you know, it's like quicksand, man. The harder you try, the faster you sink. So just now being in an organization that, you know, believes in what I believe in, I think is huge, and just kind of running with that.
Very cool. I'm a huge baseball fan. Like, I'm sitting in my basement, and it's all memorabilia, autographs. what are your thoughts on autograph seekers at games?
Oh, dude, they're great.
Yeah.
It gives me an opportunity to kind of present my personality, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as you can see just through this call, it's like I'm very outgoing. Like, I love people. I love talking. I love sharing experiences. Yeah, dude, like, you know, autograph seekers are just, I don't know, it's just another way to kind of present who I am. You know, they see the person on the card, and they see the person on the field, and they don't really get to understand who that actually is. So I don't know, that's kind of like my time to, you know, just ask how their day is, and, you know, hopefully can give them a different perspective on, you know, who I am as an individual. And I think there's times and places for it. Obviously people, you know, go above and beyond sometimes. but no, man, they're all good. They're just trying to get a card signed. The only thing that I would say is, like, it's tough for players when you're trying to get somewhere, or you have somewhere to be, and there's an individual that has, like, a lot of cards, you know, a whole handful.
Yeah.
And you got a job to do, you know, and you got to be somewhere. And we never tried to, you know, be mean or, you know, big league anyone. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's as far as those go.
All right. So if you're in Springfield again, you might be meeting me in person then.
Oh, okay.
I've been telling my 7-year-old daughter I want to take her down to Springfield to catch a game. We're in St. Louis, so we're about 3 hours away.
Oh, is that how long it is? I never knew that.
Yeah, it's well, it depends on who's driving. But
have you ever been to Springfield?
Yeah, I've been. I've been down there for one game. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago now, but yeah, I love that stadium.
Dude, yeah. So it just got rated like top minor league field or minor league stadium in all of baseball this past year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Definitely. Oh man, I've been super fortunate with places I've played as far as home stadiums go. Oh man, especially in the Cardinals organization.
Yeah, Memphis is a nice one too.
Yeah, I look forward if I ever get the opportunity to play there.
I have a feeling you'll be there this year.
Hey man, good Lord willing, things will work out.
that might be another place you'd meet me, because I've gone down there for games before too.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that stadium as well.
So have you kept memorabilia from your career, jerseys or whatnot?
No, they don't. Yeah, I've always wanted to keep jerseys, but like I never get the opportunity. I'm too cheap to do the auction ones where like you can buy your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm too cheap for that. but as far as like memorabilia, man, I'm a hoarder, and I get that from my pops. And you know, throughout his career, he kept a bunch of stuff. And being a son and like growing up and having that stuff around the house,
yeah,
and seeing that is like super cool, you know. And so that's kind of something I learned at an early age. You know, it sucks because you gotta pack a lot of stuff and you gotta find places for a lot of stuff, but at the same time I think it's something that, you know, when the day comes that, you know, I can have children, that I can show like, this is what I did, you know.
Yeah. And,
like, this is who I played with, or like stuff like that. So like I'm always trying to keep certain things from different places, you know, because I've been super fortunate with having played in a lot of different, you know, ballparks, states, now countries.
Yeah.
So, you know, just trying to gather whatever I can, you know, whether it be like dirt or, you know, a ticket or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And storing it.
So have you ever asked a teammate for an autograph?
Have I ever asked a teammate for an autograph? Dude, I don't think so. Maybe, I mean, I'm sure I have. Like a team set that we've gotten, like a team card set.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'd be. But no, I haven't. My dad keeps telling me, like, dude, like, when you play against guys, like, because I've gotten to the position where, like, I'm starting to play against, like, big league rehab guys,
or yeah,
even, like, play with guys that are going to be, like, future stars, you know? So I need to start upping that up, I guess.
Well, I appreciate you taking time with me. I got one last question I like to ask people on interviews.
All right.
Do you partake in adult beverages?
Oh, man. Yeah, I do. I'm not heavy on it, but I do partake, I guess you could say.
All right. What is your go-to beer? I'm a big beer guy, too.
You're a big beer guy. Of course you are. You're from St. Louis. You know what? You're going to hate me, dude, but I am not a beer guy at all.
Really?
I do not like beer. And everyone says, like, it's an acquired taste. And, you know, over time you will. And, man, I continue to branch out and try and just dislike.
You'll just have to work your way to St. Louis, and there's plenty of options.
I know. I got a couple friends from St. Louis, man, and they're all kind of big beer guys. So it's something about that culture, man.
Yeah.
The acquired taste, you know, is a little bit better, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of options to try here. I'll say that.
Yeah. No, there's a beer here in Puerto Rico. It's called a Medalla, and I think, to be honest, that is probably the least disgusting beer I've tasted.
All right. I'll have to look into it.
Not something that I would, you know, be like, oh, dude, I can't wait to have a beer tonight. You know what I mean?
It's like,
dude, I'm a big fan of water and, you know, Kool-Aid fruit jammers.
So yeah.
We'll stick with those kid drinks.
Yeah. All right, man. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate the opportunity, man.
All right. I'll talk to you later. And there it is. If you want to follow Robbie on Twitter and Instagram, he's at RobbieRow12. That's RobbyRow12. You can find us at nerdcast.com. It's NYRDCAST. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at nerdcast. Again, it's NYRDCAST. We're on Facebook, too. Just search for Nerdcast. This week's music is provided by Live My Last, and this is their song, We Sing This Song.
try to breathe just to keep our sanity. We've all been there before. Now we all sing that song. Every step we try to breathe just to keep our sanity. Again, kill the memories and places we've been. Pull the end sights